So, this morning, I want to tell you just a small story. Many of you are familiar with it, to introduce this case. It's a story of this Zen master, Koban Chino Atagawa, who came over from Japan. He was an assistant to Shunryo Suzuki, and he became the head teacher at Tassajara. He was also a Kyudo master, that is, a master of Zen archery. And at some point, he was asked to go to Esalen to teach archers from all around. They came to learn from him. So this one day, he asked them all to come outside for a demonstration. He set up a target at the very end of a long, long lawn that went down to the edge of a cliff that overlooked an ocean. They say he took out his bow. He notched his arrow, he took careful aim, and he shot. The arrow went down to the end of the lawn. It went over the target, past the railing, beyond the cliff, only to plunge into the ocean far below. They say that Atagawa turned to all of his students happily and shouted, "Bullseye!" So that brings us to our case today. It is case number 48, Kempo's One Way. Here's the main case. A monk once asked Kempo, "The Bhagavats of the Ten Directions have one road to Nirvana. Where, may I ask, does that road begin?" Kempo held up his stick, drew a line in the air, and said, "Here." Later, the monk asked for Uman's help. Uman held up his fan and said, "This fan has jumped up to the 33rd heaven and hit the nose of the deity there. The dragon carp of the eastern sea flips its tail, and it rains cats and dogs." That's the case. Here's the commentary. One goes to the bottom of the deep sea and raises a cloud of sand and dust. The other goes to the top of a towering mountain and raises foaming waves that touch the sky. The one holds, the other lets go. And each, using only one hand, sustains the teaching of Zen. What they do is exactly like two children who come running from opposite directions and crash into each other. In this world, such people who grasp truth directly are difficult to find. But if we look at these two great teachers with the true eye, neither of them really knows where their Nirvana road is. And the verse, "Without raising a foot, we're there already. The tongue has not moved, but the teaching is finished. Even though at each step you may be ahead of him, know there is still another way up." So first, let's just sort of take a look at the characters in this koan. First, we've got this monk, and it turns out he is quoting from the Surangama Sutra, that says that all of the Buddhas in the universe have come enlightened in only one way. So he's asking, you know, wow, what is this way? You know, tell me, where do I begin? So he's looking at the sutra and it's like, wow, is this true? Just tell me. So he may be a little lost, looking outside himself, looking for words to guide him and give him a hint. But don't make light of this monk. You can hear that he's really sincere. He's not like some of the monks that are all clever and are trying to show, you know, how smart they are. And so I think it's really important to value in others and in yourself just a kind of sincere heart for this practice, a real longing to know. And something simple, something true, something sincere. Many years ago, I read a poem, and I wish I'd written down the name of the author. But whoever it was, I think they were trying to speak of this place. It said, "Not for the sake of the beholder, in the deep mountains blossoms the cherry out of the sincerity of its heart." Hear that. Not for the sake of the beholder, in the deep mountains blossoms the cherry out of the sincerity of its heart. Treasure that in yourself. So anyway, moving on, then we have Zen Master Kenpo, and he holds up a stick, he draws a line in the air, and he says, "Here. Here it is." He uses what's at hand. The stick was right there. "Here's our teaching, right here, right now. Wake up. See, hear, feel, taste, touch this world of phenomena." He's manifesting here what we call in Zen holding fast, being present, being serious, being simple, and being disciplined. In Zazen practice, holding fast is deeply valued. It's primary and it's essential. One-pointed attention, this mu, this hu, this breath, over and over. You know, criticize yourself. Back to mu. You dream of a time when things will get better. Back to mu. You watch and judge your so-called practice. Back to mu. You get whacked with the kiyosaku. And back to mu. Now, I heard last night, some people's way, apparently, in feeling the kiyosaku, has to do with in feeling invigorated. You know, you feel invigorated and back to mu. My way was a different way. And I had a lot of experience with getting hit. But my way was more like, ow! This was inside my head. Ow! Mo! 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 God damn it. Mo! 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 Just saying, that was my way. Your way is just experiencing whatever is arising for you. And back to me. This holding fast goes deeper and deeper to the place before things arise, to that unchanging, undying place that you cannot imagine and you can't make happen. Manjushri says, "The price of wisdom is cutting through delusion." You pay that price on the cushion, holding fast. Now, to the monk's credit, he doesn't just say, "Oh, thanks, now I get it." He must have detected something, like, is there some, what? So he goes to Uman to ask. And so they say, Uman held up his fan and said, this fan has jumped up to the 33rd heaven and hit the nose of the deity there. The dragon carp of the eastern sea makes one leap and it rains cats and dogs. How strange is that? Wild, free, crazy, playful, nonsensical, undisciplined. Feels like the very opposite of what Kempo presented. But in the realm of one way, can opposites even exist? So Uman presents this letting go side, an imaginative, mythical, free-wheeling response. The letting go side of the coin reveals itself moment to moment, and you dissolve sort of in gentle acceptance of this revelation. Like Canone Moore, you open your arms to the cries of the world, and they're your cries. You give permission for these arisings to have their life and to pass away. So what is the monk to do with Kempo saying holding fast is where you begin, and Uman says letting go is where you begin? And eventually you'll understand Yogi Berra, who says, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. Good advice. The commentary says, one holds, the other lets go. And each using only one hand sustains the teaching of Zen. What they do is exactly like two children who come running from opposite directions and crash into each other. In this world, such people who grasp truth directly are difficult to find. They talk about in Zen somehow going across the ocean or going from one shore to the other. And I heard a wonderful expression that wasn't meant to apply here, but it sort of does for me in a certain way. Like, how do you get yourself together to take this trip? And it says, if you want to build a great ship, do not assemble teams of people. Do not gather materials and assign tasks. First, learn the immensity of the sea. Zazen teaches the immensity of this vast sea of experiences that you temporarily call yourself. We have a practice, a mu, hu, breath, koan. This practice helps lead us out of the dream world that we have created into the world of our true nature. And happily, ultimately, it turns out that there are no mistakes. None of these things that we temporarily call delusion are a problem. As the Buddha says, wonder of wonders, everything, everything manifests this Buddha nature. If you know this for yourself, then even the quarrel of the moment becomes the knowing of your oneness with all things. Delusion and non-delusion drop away. You're enough. The world is enough. Your heart and the Buddha beat as one. Your way fills the universe. Your way transcends the concepts and instructions. There is no place in your world that the Buddha is not. T.S. Eliot said, we shall not cease from exploration, and at the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the very first time. How could Kempo and Uman give the right answer to the monk's question? As Mumon comments, but if we look at these two great teachers with the true eye, neither of them really knows where the Nirvana road is. The bad news is, they can't help you. Neither of these masters know your road. The good news is, they can't help you. You've always had everything you ever need, but you have to do the job yourself. Why do we sit? Atagawa says the significance of your life is not experienced in striving to create some perfect thing. We must simply start with accepting ourselves. Sitting brings us back to actually who and where we are. This can be very painful. Self-acceptance is the hardest thing to do. If we can't accept ourselves, we're living in ignorance. This is the darkest night. We may still be awake, but we don't know where we are. We cannot see. The mind has no light. Practice is this candle in our very darkest room. So how do we use this candle of practice? Just reflect for a moment on how often you wish things were otherwise. How often you wish you were elsewhere. How often you wish others were different. We have to see, we have to look at this judging and objecting and wishing for something else, wishing for a life that was something else. Wandering off is what we do, and noticing we're wandering is the path. Right effort requires our attention, our noticing what it is to be a human being. It's attending to our moments without complaining. This kind of attention is not so much concentration as it is noticing and tending to, a kind of compassionate attention. This one way is your way. Everything you do is a manifestation of Buddha. There is no place to go. This isn't about improvement. This is about coming to the source that gives life to your life. We practice in a field of anger and fear and jealousy and arrogance and lust and boredom and craving and fun and happiness and caring. This rich, rich field of experience. You learn to attend to the flow of things just as they are, as best you can, not feeding ego, not grasping, not pushing away. In the realms of desire, wishes, hopes, and dreams, we begin what it means to be enough, awake, alert, alive, holding as best you can moment to moment and walking on. And the journey begins with the sincerity of the effort we make on this cushion, holding as best we can to this mu or hu or breath or koan, and the sincerity of the vow we take each time we come to the zendo and vow, all beings, one body, I vow to liberate. Endless blind passions, I vow to uproot. Dharma gates beyond measure, I vow to penetrate. The great way of Buddha, I vow to attain. Ken MacLeod, a teacher I have great respect for, said it this way: when we embark on the spiritual path, we have no idea what we will encounter. As our practice matures, the horse starts to run, but we don't know where it's going. All we have is a commitment to experience whatever arises. It is what Buddha Shakyamuni relied on when he sat under the Bodhi tree. It is the essence of faith, and it is the basis of compassion and awareness. Do you come to the Zendo to be special? Do you come to entertain yourself? Do you come for superpowers or to become superior to other human beings? If you do, no problem. Just notice these ego wanderings. Be kind. And come back to your practice. Come back to your vow. You're already enough, just as you are. Sit up. Come home to the life that's been waiting patiently for you. I promise you, you're enough. You don't have to trust me. I'm going to read from Rinzai. He says it too. This is Rinzai. He said, followers of the way, the outstanding teachers from times past have all had ways of drawing people out. What I myself want to impress on you is that you mustn't be led astray by others. If you want to use this thing, then use it and have no doubts or hesitation. When students today fail to make progress, where's the fault? The fault lies in the fact they don't have faith in themselves. If you don't have faith in yourself, then you'll be forever in a hurry trying to keep up with everything around you. You'll be twisted and turned by whatever environment you're in, and you can never move freely. But if you can just stop this mind that goes rushing around moment by moment looking for something, then you'll be no different from the patriarchs and Buddhas. Do you want to get to know the patriarchs and Buddhas? They're none other than you, the people standing in front of me, listening to this lecture on the Dharma. Followers of the way, as I look at it, we're no different from Shakyamuni. In all our various activities each day, is there anything we lack? The wonderful light of the six faculties has never for a moment ceased to shine. If you could just look at it this way, then you'd be the kind of person that has nothing to do for the rest of your life. This Zazen practice is a practice of intimacy. Intimacy with your own moments. Intimacy with returning over and over and over again to attention, to awareness. It's intimacy with all the arisings of the mind. It is here that you begin to understand what Kenpo meant. It's right here. It's simple. Where have you been seeking? It is here that you can experience yourself in a place of oneness. And then the work is only half done. The world continues to present itself with all its challenges. Uman says, what holds you back? What's not possible for you? This is your life. Derek Wolcott speaks of this in a poem. He says, the time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arising at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, here, eat. You will love again the stranger that was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, who you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf. Take down the photographs and desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. On your cushion. This says she. I sincerely hope that you can come to trust and love your moment-to-moment life this much. But maybe you can't. No problem. Then I have the wonderful words of Ryokan for you. He said, last year, a foolish monk. This year, no change. Bullseye! We'll end there today.